This is KKFN, KKFN HD1, Longmont, Denver.
The 5 o'clock whistle, powered by smart local union 9 sheet metal workers.
We are coming with it, and we are coming for it. It's Zach Bai and Philip Lindsay, and we are The Drive. And we are 10 days away from the NFL draft.
Just 10?
Yeah.
We can count that on our fingers.
We can.
Wow.
We can. The Broncos have to get this right. They have to get it right.
Mm.
We've called it a tipping point for the franchise. Quarterback or no quarterback. Trading all the way up the draft, trading back. We don't know. But we know that they have to get it right. And if they don't, they're just not going anywhere anytime soon. And it's the Broncos and the Jets who have the longest playoff droughts in the NFL. And if the Jets with Aaron Rodgers figure out a way, which I think they can, very good defense, some good skill position players.
Yep.
With Rodgers, we'll see. But you could see a scenario where the Broncos have the longest playoff drought in NFL football. And I want to talk about the draft and the Broncos' approach here and just get up to the latest with what's being said, and we'll be joined by Cecil here in just a couple minutes. But before we look forward, I did want to look back briefly. And I was thinking to myself, I'm like, okay, Broncos are in the worst NFL stretch they've ever had. They have to get it right.
Yeah.
It's a tipping point. It's a fork in the road, all this stuff. But also, how did we get here? And if someone was frozen the way that Austin Powers was forever, and then they woke up, and the last time they were awake was Super Bowl 50, and they woke up today, and they're like, what happened? How would you go about explaining how the Broncos got to this position?
Yeah.
Since Super Bowl 50.
Ooh. So if it's Austin Powers and he's frozen, after he's done frozen, I'm going to say, Austin, get some pants on first.
Yes.
All right? And let me sit down. Let me tell you a story. And I would say that same store that was first put together before you got frozen, go look at it now.
The store?
Just a store.
Yeah.
Right? He goes and looks at it. It's ran down. It's not there anymore. He says, what happened? You could tell what happened. Okay, the only thing the store's still there, but it's all messed up. There's only a couple people to blame. The owner for that store.
Mm.
The manager in that store.
Mm.
Those two didn't keep that store going. Those two didn't take care of that store. And now that store that you seen before you were frozen, now you're unfrozen, you're seeing it now, it's not there anymore. That's kind of how the Denver Broncos are, Austin. That's kind of how it is. You've seen this organization at the highest, and then when it was beautiful, and then when it was shiny, and then 7 years, 8 years later, you come back to see the same place that's shiny and beautiful, and it's ran down.
Yeah.
And who is it to blame? You can blame the players all you want. But ultimately, it's the top. We had an owner that was doing great things for us, and he was no longer there anymore because he was sick and couldn't do it anymore. All right, after that, it went to nothing. Everything got ran down. There was no ownership there.
Yeah.
That's where it starts.
Man, I really like that. I really like that. And when I was thinking about the decisions, like at my kitchen table this morning doing this segment and thinking about what are the biggest contributing factors, like what are the three biggest mistakes is how I had it in my head. What are the three biggest mistakes since Super Bowl 50 that led the Broncos to this point, where they're in a full-blown rebuild for the first time maybe ever in their NFL history? And I didn't think of Mr. Bolin. I did not. And that was super foolish on my part, because that's where you go right out of the gate, and that is maybe the one biggest singular thing that happened to this franchise that derailed it. And it would you'd be naive to think that there's not a direct correlation, because you could actually start, look at the beginning of Pat Bowlen's tenure in Denver to the end, look at the age of prosperity, and then soon as he's gone, you could draw a straight line with a Sharpie with his struggles. It's like when Mufasa was no longer King of the Prides, and just, it's boom. There was a turnover that happened, and it affected, you know, the entire Pride land. And with this, I love that. I love that. But this is what I was thinking of. You're laughing at my Lion King analogy. I'm sorry.
No, I love it, man. It's like, why is he not getting up, Dad? You know, when his father passed.
That's a tough scene.
It really is, man. It really is. And when they came back, it was all gray and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's a yeah. great analogy, man. Cute.
Well, thank you. I was with just my daughter this past weekend, and we watched Frozen twice.
Oh.
So I'm like kind of like in Disney mode a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Why would you not be?
Dude, she's 2 years old. She'll close the door in the house, sit down at the... Have you seen Frozen?
Yeah, I have. Multiple times.
She'll sit down, put her back to the door, and pretend that she's talking to Elsa. And she'll do it for like 30 minutes. When she's like, do you want to build That's a snowman? True. She like, wants her to come out and play. It's adorable. It's like heartbreaking too. I'm like, baby, there's no one on the other side. So she's either hearing voices or has an incredible imagination. When I was thinking about the contributing factors, I want to talk with Cecil about this here in just a couple minutes because I do want to talk about the draft and I want to look ahead.
Yeah.
But it's important to know your history. And those who don't know history are doomed to repeat it.
Mm.
So I think it's important for us in our schools, despite it happening 90 years ago, to understand how, you know, what happened in 1939 yeah. in Germany. Like, how did that happen over the course of, you know, 8 years or whatever it was to where you have genocide? And I mean, yeah. I know that's very serious, and this is not dark. what we're talking about here. But in general, like, you should know these things. And as we're 10 days away from one of the most important windows in the history of the Broncos, it's like, how did we get to this point? What are the three biggest mistakes? This is what I was thinking. Examples, and these are just candidates, okay? Not all of them deserve to be in the conversation, big picture, but like not bringing Peyton Manning back in 2016, letting him get healthy and bringing him back. Drafting Paxton Lynch, the miscalculation of the Brock Osweiler situation, sticking with Trevor Siemian too long, hiring rookie head coach Vance Joseph, going down the Case Keenum path, drafting Bradley Chubb over a quarterback with the 5th overall pick, hiring a rookie head coach in Vic Fangio, going down the Joe Flacco path, firing Rich Scangarello after having success with Drew Locke and then pivoting to Pat Shurmur, John Elway staying too long, the hiring of George Payton and the decisions that followed, which included the hiring of Nathaniel Hackett, the Russell Wilson mega trade, more so the paying of Russell Wilson a mega deal. As we put all this stuff out, and we'll tag Cecil into this conversation because he was here for every step of this. But I'm curious, Phil, as I rattle through that list, is there one thing that hit you more uniquely than another?
Other than what we talked about at the beginning.
With the ownership, yes.
With the ownership, the first thing, if we're going to go three, right, for me it would be the ownership, which then trickles down to John Elway being there too long. Nobody holding John accountable. Nobody there to let John know, hey, you're not doing this right, or hey, we shouldn't go this direction. We should not keep on trying to get some of these quarterbacks that you like. Let's kind of sit down and reevaluate things. And I think for me, it has to be Brock Osweiler. Okay, you're developing Brock Osweiler. You have him coming up in there. You groomed him up just to let him go. And now we're scrambling to try to find anything and everything we can at the quarterback position.
That's a really interesting one because as our buddy Cecil, and I gave him credit earlier in the show, the dirty little secret in the NFL is fit.
Mm.
And you can say that Brock was going to fail here regardless, but that's a pretty defeatist attitude. We don't know that. And it was a fit here. Yep. It was a fit when the season was on the line in the Super Bowl 50 year. So that's an interesting under-the-radar one that maybe doesn't get talked about enough.
I think it is the one answer that needs to be talked about. So, Phil, once again, you're right. I just jump on for 5 seconds, and I'm talking about how my man Phil is right once again. But it does come back to Brock because, and listen, I've talked to Brock since he's retired, and he does have regret about the way things went down here. But if you got benched for Peyton Manning, bro.
Yeah.
You weren't winning Super Bowl 50 with Brock Osweiler. You were winning Super Bowl 50 with Peyton flipping Manning.
Now people
says freaking, but
people so. people do disagree on that. Right. Could you have won as a
right?
And I've talked with and referenced this earlier. Like I've talked with guys on the team saying we don't win without Peyton. He was like the compass of that team.
I've talked to opponents that said we had no idea what Peyton could or couldn't do. The Chargers specifically in that game in Week 17 where they could have gone from the 8th seed to the 1 seed.
Yes, right.
You bring him in at halftime. And you let Peyton Manning take over, and the Chargers didn't know, is that Peyton or is that the shell of Peyton? We all know it was kind of the shell at the time, but he was so good. He was so far ahead of the play. And you don't win Super Bowl 50 without Brock. That's the whole, like, double-edged sword to this. Like, you don't get there without Brock, but you don't win it with Brock. You win it with PFM. That's what they did. So it does go back to Brock. And I can even make the argument, fellas, that you could have still had Brock Osweiler as your quarterback today.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Today. Because
I mean, what is he, 32 or something? 33?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 30 something? That's crazy to think.
It is. It is. But you spent the 4 years developing him, and then he was ready.
Yeah.
And then because of hurt feelings on his part, right? And then the Broncos offer, which they bumped up, because initially, top of my head, it was like 12, and then they bumped it up to 15, but then Houston said 16, and then Houston had to do a basketball deal to get him out of there to pay to, like, hey, can you just take him?
Right.
He could have just stayed. He could have taken over. They would have never drafted Paxton, because my first answer was, I'm going to blame it all on Paxton. But that's not the answer. The answer is, you had Brock here, you developed him for 4 years, and then you couldn't keep him around.
And the dominoes that followed after that. And guys, if you're just joining us, we're trying to figure out 10 days ahead of the draft just exactly how the Broncos get to this point and what were the three most impactful mistakes in Super Bowl 50 that led to this moment where the Broncos have to get it right. And if they don't, they're going to stay in the NFL basement where they currently reside. And the thing about the trickle-down effect, the Brock Osweiler miscalculation with Brock.
Mm-hmm.
Brock leaves. Now you're going to draft a new quarterback. John Elway loves Paxton Lynch. Kyle Shanahan doesn't like Paxton Lynch. That comes up, according to Woody Page, this past year, that comes up and was a dividing factor between John Elway and Kyle Shanahan.
Right.
So Kyle Shanahan doesn't get hired in Denver, where he said it would have been his dream job. He goes to San Francisco. You do end up drafting Paxton Lynch. He's one of the most unique busts in NFL history because he doesn't have a chance to fail the way that Jamarcus Russell, Johnny Manziel
were.
That's crazy. Right. Dude, it's so freaking rare. It's never happened. There's no precedent. Not like this. Not like Paxton. And then because of that, the next domino is you drafted a tall, strong-armed, accuracy question mark quarterback
mobile.
Out of a small conference that was mobile. And then 2 years later, you need a quarterback again. And there's a tall, strong-armed, accuracy question mark quarterback from a small conference that's mobile who's staring at you, and you don't do it because of the Paxton scar.
Right.
And, I mean, dude, I said to Phil earlier, I don't think this is a documentary. This is like a book. It needs a book if you wanted to encapsulate just exactly how we got here.
Yeah, it's a lot of things adding up to where you're at currently, but it does start with Brock, and then the mistakes just continue to happen, right? And I do agree with Phil again about the trust was put in place to make sure that the trust stayed in place.
Yeah.
I don't want to be mean.
That was so messy,
man. I like Joe Ellis and all those guys, but that was a messy situation.
Yeah, it was.
I think that's the best way to put it.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, it had someone pretending to be an owner. Again, I don't want to be personal, but like you had someone pretending to be an owner, not an actual owner, not someone with skin in the game, right? And you look at what Greg Penner has done as leading this Broncos charge, like he's putting Sean Payton in charge. That's why the mistakes of the past will be erased based on how Walton Penner Group is going to do business. Does it get erased with Sean Payton? Are they the dynasty that I said they would be with Walton Penner Group? Yeah, I still believe that. We got to see if it's with Sean Payton or without.
We're with Cecil in studio. Go ahead, Phil.
No, I was going to say with the Penner situation, right? We talk about sometimes history can repeat itself. Do you think Greg Penner, right, understands the history of what has happened when
Pat Bowlen?
Pat Bowlen was in charge and what kind
yes.
of went down
yes.
and how it kind of the fall of it. Because obviously you need to know the history of what you're getting yourself into mm-hmm. so that you don't make that same mistake.
Yes. And here's the great thing. And being around guys like you, Phil, you know, others, other former players and stuff, like I observe you successful guys and how you succeeded in football and I admire it, right? I try to implement it in my life. I observe Greg Penner and just the Walton Penner Group in general, like, okay, how do they do business? They go, who's the best we can get? Okay, what's it cost? Who cares? Now go get him. Now you got to do your job. So Greg Penner has studied, and I'm certain of this. I don't have this for 100% fact, but I feel certain that he studied the business of football
mm-hmm.
in terms of how Mr. Bowlen got it done. Because Mr. B, the story's always the same, right? Like, hey, I'll do anything to take what it takes to win.
Yeah.
I will pay whatever. I mean, they did kind of finagle the salary cap a little bit in 32 and 33. That's just the truth, Broncos country. Don't get mad at me. But, like, they did what it took to win championships with Pat Bowlen leading the charge of, I don't care what it takes.
Yeah.
We're going to do it. I feel the same sort of energy from Greg Penner and the Walton Penner Group.
Well, I do, too. I want to circle back to Greg here in just a second.
Okay.
Pat Bowlen was so thirsty to make this organization a winner without the resources that Greg has. Think about that. Pat Bowlen was closer to Dick Monfort and his upbringing and his financial background than he is to Greg Penner.
Right.
There was, I've talked to people in this organization that said there was times that the Broncos were taking out a loan for a $3 million signing bonus in the 2000s. In the 2000s. Okay, and that comes from a rock solid source. And what I'm saying is that he just wasn't going to lose. Whatever we got to do, we're cash poor. Don't care. We're still
we'll
all
a,
in.
We'll find a way.
We will find a way. Yeah.
Right.
Like a freaking mom or dad. I'm thinking like my single mom. Just like, nope, we're going to figure it out. Oh, the chip. Nope, we're going to figure it out. Don't worry. Right. And that was Pat Bowlen. And with Greg, I am as optimistic as you are, and the signs are right there. Like, there's real tangible things to draw from. I'm not going to itemize the list. You guys know the list. But it's like there's real stuff to draw from. But it still needs to transition to a winner. And the one question that I have, I believe Sean Payton's a damn good football coach, and I hope this thing works out big picture. But the one part when you said there, you're like, Greg believes hiring the right people and then letting them do their job. The one baby question mark I have is if the guy you hired wasn't your first or second choice and how that changes the dynamic of allowing that person to do their job if the finances is not an issue over the next 3-4 years. If he wasn't the first choice and he wasn't the second choice, and I don't believe he was either, how that could change the dynamic.
I don't think that is coloring the conversation, though, about Penner and Peyton, and here's why. Because I said, it's who can we get? Well, they couldn't get DeMeco.
Yeah.
They wanted DeMeco. They couldn't get Jim Harbaugh. They wanted Jim Harbaugh. Now those guys are in your neighborhood, and D'Amico's going to lead a Super Bowl contender in the Houston Texans this year. You see how it works, man. Yeah, so did Greg Penner have an eye for talent, quote-unquote? Yeah. Yeah. Harbaugh's pretty damn good, and obviously D'Amico Ryan's pretty damn good. Now it's on Peyton. So now it's up to him to produce results. He's well-paid. He's handsomely compensated. And this ownership group just isn't going to sit around and be like, it's okay, Sean. We stink again, Sean. No, the pressure is there, low-key. Like, there's way more pressure on George Payton. I'm not sure if he has a job past May, but, like, there is low-key pressure on Sean Payton. You got, hey, we're doing everything. You have everything you want. Why aren't you winning? Why aren't you performing? You have everything you want, Sean Payton. They put the trust in him. Now the results have to match.
See, I like what you said there, Cecil. And on top of this, with your question, Zach, is a lot of times in life, you're never going to usually get your first option, right? I guarantee I wasn't the first option, right? But in the end, things work out how they're supposed to work out. I think Sean, and you know I poop on Sean a lot, but Sean is the right man for the job because he has that Grim Reaper mentality. You need somebody to come in that has a backbone like that, that can restructure things, you know, gut everything out, have the bones and the guts to go through a whole situation where people may not like you for it, but you have to have it done. Some of these people, we don't know what D'Amico Ryans would have done over here. You know, it's a little bit different over there in Houston because I've been over there, so I see how the general manager kind of set things up. It's not just what D'Amico did that year. It kind of was built before D'Amico got there.
Right.
You know, for John Harbaugh or Jim Harbaugh. We don't know what this man's getting ready to do. This is going to be his first year. He's trying to rebuild.
First year with the Chargers.
First year's with the Chargers, right? In a very long time since he's been in the NFL.
Yes, it has
been. We have to see what he's really going to do over here before we start giving him his flowers.
And that's exactly right, because you have a new GM with the Chargers. But here's what I want to pick the brain of really, really bad, because it wasn't that long ago the Houston Texans were thought of as an embarrassment and a joke. And I'm talking front office.
Totally. Yeah.
Like clown show.
Totally.
Front office.
Who was the reverend there?
Now look at him. I can't remember the guy's name.
Easterby.
Yes, Jack Easterby.
Jack Easterby.
Good pull, Phil.
He used to smile in your face but do some dark stuff.
Now look at him now.
Yeah.
For all the Broncos fans like, oh, it's going to take forever and oh, punt on this year and just wait and go get your quarterback in 25 or 26.
Hey, who was their first quarterback? Who did they really want? Who did the Texans want?
Yes, good point. Bryce Young.
They wanted Bryce Young. They didn't get Bryce Young. Who did they get for the second option?
Yeah, C.J. Stroud.
Right? C.J. Stroud. So and sometimes your first option.
Oh, that's
the first
good.
Option is usually never the one that you really.
That's he's going to Garth Brooks.
The first option is what you want. But it's never really what you need. You need somebody different, and that's why the second and third options usually are better options for you.
Great callback with the Sean Payton not being the first option, tying it to Houston.
Wow.
That was good.
You got chills.
It's good. It's good. This guy, he's getting better. He's growing.
Like
right in my eyes.
Over here, man.
He's
like,
over here blushing and stuff. I got to kind of here. Let me put the window right here. I got a wife, Zach.
What's the latest? What are you hearing?
Yeah, man.
Hold on. Do you have time to stick around?
Because and I'll tell you why I think the New England Patriots are going to ruin the Broncos' chances.
And that's coming up next. Do you guys want to come hang? You want to hang with Phil? You want to hang with myself? All you have to do is subscribe to our Denver Sports YouTube channel. From now until May 10th, be entered for your chance to win. It's simple. Go to YouTube, search Denver Sports, and click the subscribe button. If you win, you get to have lunch with Phil and myself, courtesy of Brothers Barbecue. You get a tour of the station, and you also get to watch part of the show live in studio. And you never know who's going to be kicking around here. And we saw Cecil. So get your butt in here. And
try to escape us.
Ha.
Like the draft,
never.
But we got him.
pretty rare nowadays, especially that we keep a guest through the break. But we got so deep on how the Broncos got here, which I'm glad we had that conversation because I think there's value in knowing the past and then looking ahead to the future.
Right.
But the NFL draft, going in the last break, said, what's the latest? And you said New England may try to ruin the draft?
Yeah, ruin the draft for the Broncos specifically. Because in January I had heard, and I put Adam Schefter on this when I saw him at the owners' meetings. I said, Adam, this is what I've heard. Please dig on it for me. Is that they want Jaden Daniels, and if they don't get Jaden Daniels, they'd move back from 3, and they would get Michael Penix somewhere later in the first round. Don't know if that's 12 or 30 or whatever. Well, now, after they have worked out J.J. McCarthy twice, two times with J.J. McCarthy.
New England.
Yes, the New England Patriots sitting at number 3 seem content on taking J.J. McCarthy at 3. And I don't know if the Broncos can get that pick. I don't know if there's been conversations to get that pick. We've heard it's a good day to be Monty at 4. You know, Monty at 4 means you're getting Drake May. You're not getting J.J. McCarthy if, in fact, New England is not blowing smoke. Because here's the thing. Watch what they do, not what they say. What they've said to me specifically is, like Jaden Daniels, I also heard a week or two ago, we will take Drake May at 3, which I thought was funny because it was like April and I hadn't heard anything about Drake May and the Patriots. And then now what they've done, though, is show serious interest with 2 days of being with J.J. McCarthy and meeting with J.J. McCarthy. So at number 3, Robert Kraft has already said, we need to get that young franchise quarterback. Well, that might be J.J. McCarthy for him. So if you're a Broncos fan thinking that they can move up and get J.J., he might already be gone by the place that they could move up, which is number 4.
Well, Cease, you have people saying we need to move up. We have people saying we need to stay the same. We have people saying that we need to move down.
Yeah.
What is the smartest option for Denver if someone like J.J. McCarthy, if that's the case, if that's who they want, they can't get him?
Yeah.
What's the smartest option to do after that?
The smartest option to do is move up and get your quarterback. Now, is that Drake May? It depends on what Sean Payton thinks of Drake May.
Right.
But if it truly is 1, 2, 3, Caleb, Jaden, JJ, then Drake at 4 for the Broncos would make the most sense for me in that situation. For everyone that says trade down from 12, who in the world wants to trade up to 12? It's where the Buffalo Bills were for years when they'd take Sammy Watkins or CJ Spiller. Right. It's the no man's land.
Yeah.
There's a dead zone in the draft. You get outside the top 10, unless someone falls, Olufoshanu from Penn State. Another April lie, I believe, but I'm just going to tell you what I know. The Penn State tackle, who I have is the number 3 tackle. I wrote up my tackles, numbersports.com. So Olufoshanu, the rumors are he will fall in this draft. I don't think so. I don't think he should. But that's what the buzz is right now. Probably agent-fed information. But outside of the number 3 tackle in this class, if Brock Bowers falls to 12, well, you should be taking him if you're the Broncos. Not like, hey, somebody behind you gets the guy. And then you've got the Las Vegas Raiders. And I believe in Antonio Pierce a lot. And you may not like to hear that, Broncos fans. You'll be fine. I'll be fine. But I believe in Antonio Pierce. I believe you can't really make fun of the Raiders anymore for their head coach situation like you could a year ago.
Broncos haven't been able to make fun of the Raiders in years.
I know.
Sorry, go ahead.
They're right behind them.
Yep.
And you're sitting there, we can move back to 25 and get Bo Nix. Well, who in the hell wants to move up to 12? nobody. And then the Raiders could just take Penix or Nix right there at 13.
Right.
And again, ruin your dreams. And this is where I fear the impact and the influence of George Payton. I believe George Payton has an eye for talent. I also believe that George Payton has been scared, and I don't say that in a mean way, but I think there's some trepidation in his philosophy because he was in on Christian Ponder. He was in on Teddy Bridgewater. Teddy didn't work out for injury, and Christian Ponder just stunk. He was never a first-round quarterback. It was one of the worst grades you could possibly. It was like the Mitchell Trubisky stuff. Like, how'd that happen? I remember when Ponder was drafted, I was like, what? That guy's terrible. Like, how'd Mitchell Trubisky go number two? How'd Christian Ponder go to Minnesota? So you've got a George Payton who's like kind of hesitant to make that bold move, and you've got Sean Payton, the one time he didn't make a bold move, Pat Mahomes went to pick right before him.
Right.
And he was going to take him at 11. He got cute thinking he could sit put. Remember the dead zone after 10, 11. He was sitting there at 11 thinking he was, hey, the Chiefs are all the way back at 26. Yeah, right. I heard Andy Reid likes him, but they're back at 26, man. I got Pat Mahomes. He's right here, right? It was like the, you know, Rick James, Dave Chappelle, right? Come here. I got the aura around him, everything. And come here. Give it to me, baby. And Pat Mahomes got scooped up, snatched up because he was not bold. I think Sean Payton needs to be bold. And whether that's May, possibly McCarthy, whoever, be bold and get your guy.
Man, oh man, oh man. I want to go back to the idea that the Patriots actually love J.J. McCarthy, and this is not a smokescreen. Let's assume that's the case. Drake May. We haven't spent a lot of time talking about Drake May, Phil and I.
Kind of got washed in all this hype, man.
Yeah, because we just kind of assumed he's in the top three. Yeah. Let's focus on what's attainable for the Broncos. If he was available at four, I believe the best fit in this draft for Sean Payton's system, rhythm, tempo, timing, is JJ. But if it's not, and I could be wrong about that, by the way. It's just my opinion.
Sure. What about your opinion, Zach? JJ.
What about Drake May and Sean Payton's
it's
offense?
JJ, then it's Nix. I know people don't like Bo Nix, but you should if you have Sean Payton as your coach. And Drake May is an interesting one. I've had scouts tell me that us collectively, yes, Phil, you're part of the media now. Sorry, bro.
Oh, the dark side.
Welcome. Are higher on Drake May than scouts are. Now, when people say Drake May could fall, to four. Okay. Drake May's not really falling in this draft, but he's got so much hero ball. I honestly, and I just got to tell it like it is, guys. Like, he's my number three quarterback. I still don't like his personality because he doesn't have one. And when maybe I just want to be wowed. And I know this term doesn't mean what it used to, but I want a quarterback that's kind of presidential, right? That goes up and, like JJ, he owns room. Jaden Daniels owns your soul when you talk to him, man. He's so, you know, charming and charismatic, and maybe that has nothing to do with anything. And then Drake May stands up there like, leave it to Beaver, right? And I just don't like it. I don't like it. I don't know how it would mesh with Sean Payton, because Sean Payton wants to dog cuss you, and he wants you to bow up a little bit, right? Hey, Bo Nix would do that. Bo Nix was a jerk to me at the Senior Bowl, and I love it. I'm like, hey, Bo, do it again, right? Be a little gritchy when I ask you about
under center. Is that J.J. McCarthy? See, that's where I'm at with J.J. I don't get that feeling of that dog mentality that I'm going to command this, the Patrick Mahomes kind of style where it's like Patrick demands excellence. And even when he stepped through on that the door, right, and he was behind Alex Smith, you still knew, and I heard from teammates, that he was still that leader and he was going to do a lot of great stuff.
Right. Watch the Alabama game. That's what I always point to when people say, J.J. McCarthy can't make full-field reads. Watch the Alabama game. When people say, can he be that leader? Alabama game, he had to be. He had to be on third and fourth quarter drives.
Yeah.
We're talking they go into the third downs and the fourth downs. Yes. He had to make the sick throws. He had to make the plays.
Yeah.
And his teammates will tell you he's a dog. Now, he does meditate. He's very calm. He can take a chewing.
Which is fine.
I'm not promoting verbal abuse, but like when you can take a chewing and you got your coach, okay. But it's not the Russ, like tune out. Russ would do the yes sir, no sir thing, and I'm afraid that's what Drake May would do. Because you get on him. Drake May comes from a family of athletes, which I like. But you get on him, and I'm afraid that he wouldn't bow up. He would just be like, yes, sir, and then go out there and stink. I want that guy that gives a little pushback, that has a little fire. And you know it better than anybody, Phil. All these guys want to know, Zach, is the why. That's what's fascinating about you players. And that's why I admire all of you guys so much. You make it in the league. You just know you guys can play.
Yeah.
But you just want someone to tell you the why. Coach, I'll run through that damn wall for you, Sean Payton. You tell me why I'm going to do it. I feel JJ's like that. I know Bo Nix is like that. I'm not sure Drake May's like that.
Very interesting comments. Very interesting comments. Just 10 days out ahead of the NFL draft, it's getting real. It's getting real. Cease, thanks for being here.
Appreciate you.
Appreciate it, Cease.
All right. If the Avalanche suffer another early postseason exit, is Jared Bednar's job in jeopardy? I want to talk about that with Phil coming up next.
It's time for the Drive's Top 5.
Not two, not three, not four.
Presented by High Five Plumbing. Here's Zach and Phil.
Oh, man, what a really, really fun show. I have to just say, I mean,
it was fun, man.
It flew by, as this job does when you are having fun, and we had a lot of it today. Appreciate you rocking with us for whatever duration that you did today. Thanks for making us a small part of your Monday, April 15th. I want to get into the five things we're watching for tonight. But is Jared Bednar, is his job in jeopardy? If, and this is a big qualifier here, so don't, and we're not banging the table for Jared Bednar to be, we really like Jared Bednar.
Okay. For sure.
But on the heels of being bounced in the first round and knowing the responsibility that, you know, heavy is the head that wears the crown, you're in pro sports as a head coach and in hockey where they have a quicker trigger in that sport than any other, they've made it past the second round just one time. Now, that's the year that they won the cup. Should buy you some good grace, right?
No time.
But if they get bounced early again with this core, see, because the reason I'm asking is, like, you can't have it both ways. You can't believe that McKinnon's the best player in the world, that they have two of the top five players in the world, three of the top 10, four of the top 20, and then be okay with going home in the first round in consecutive years. Someone will have to pay for that. I'm curious if you believe Jared Bednar's seat could get warm if they get bounced early.
If they get bounced early, Zach, the seat's not just going to be warm, it's going to be hot. Okay, because I think fans, I think that the organization as a whole is going to be tired and frustrated because you don't get this window for this long. You just listed so many great, great players on one team.
Yeah.
One team.
Right.
And a lot of this, us getting bounced out of there and not having more cups, has to do with some of the coaching in the goalie position has been an issue for multiple years. It hasn't just been one year, Zach.
Right.
That's one thing. After a while, you're like, and I know that's not on Bednar.
Right. That's more on Chris McFarland, yeah, general manager.
I know, but guess what? You're the head coach.
Yeah.
You're the head coach. Yeah. You're going to take the heat.
Actually, I want to have that conversation tomorrow about Chris Farland and how it could pertain to the pressure that Jared Bednar is under. Mm. And where to really put that. Not blame, because nothing's happened yet. But, man, I am uncomfortable. I will tell you, I am uncomfortable with what I'm seeing from this team at the goaltending position, obviously. But the penalty kill. Do you guys realize the Avs have given up 9 power play goals in the last 4 games? The opposition is 9 of 14. That's not sustainable. Guys, what do you think behind the glass, Drew, about Bednar's seat warming up if the Avs have another early exit?
Here's the question that I have. I think we all agree that the biggest issue on this team is goaltending, right?
Yep.
Jared Bednar can only start in goal the guys that he's been given by Chris McFarland. They had an opportunity to go out at the trade deadline and make a move. Maybe go out and get a Marc-Andre Fleury from Minnesota or somebody else to solidify this goaltending situation. They chose not to. Now, clearly they thought that Onanen was going to be good enough as a backup. Bednar doesn't seem to believe so. Bednar seems to think, I guess, that Georgiev can play his way out of this thing. But you're only as good as the players you have in front of you. If they didn't have this goaltending situation, we wouldn't be having these conversations. If Alexander Georgiev had a save percentage of .910 instead of .896, something like that, we're having a completely different conversation.
Yeah.
So I have a real hard time putting the blame on Jared Bednar, despite the fact that, yes, they've only gotten out of the first round one time. I mean, I look back to last year, guys.
Out of the second round.
Out of the second round, yeah. I look back to last year. Some of the lineups they had to throw out there because of injuries.
Yeah.
It's just like you throw your hands in there and say, what are you supposed to do?
Yeah.
And remember, you got good goaltending last year. Georgiev had a .919 save percentage last year, which is one percentage point below an elite-level goaltender.
Mm.
So I have a hard time putting the blame on Bednar, but I will say this. A lot of times in the NHL, that message gets stale, and it gets stale real quick, and I wonder if that's starting to become the case with the Avalanche.
When the Avs have a save percentage of above .900,
Their record is 26-2-2. That says it all right there.
It does.
Kamaze Granderson behind the glass. What are your thoughts real quick on this topic with Jared Bednar's job status?
Well, let me piggyback off of that, because that's exactly why I believe Jared Bednar's job is not in jeopardy right now. Right now. I think Chris McFarland, I think the entire Avs brass upstairs understands that you can only go so far with guys who have not been in a position where they learn to win when it's hard, right? Their whole lives, this thing has been front running. So that's kind of my thing with Jared Bednar, is when you are dealing with cats who are used to front running, when times get hard, you cannot be responsible for them when they start to shrivel up and backsides get tight.
All right, interesting conversation. We'll continue it tomorrow. What are you looking for tonight? Not a busy evening in sports.
This is wild. It's like crickets. Okay, it's like crickets. And you have the Colorado Rockies already playing.
Yep.
So by the time that's wrapped up, there's really nothing to watch.
Yeah.
Truly, there's no NBA games, right?
No. No, that starts tomorrow. Tomorrow's going to be fun. We'll talk about
tomorrow that. Tomorrow will be fun. So for that, for me, it's just kind of catch up on things. You know, maybe kind of get ready, go back and watch some replays and playbacks from the Avs, playbacks from the Denver Nuggets, just to kind of get ready for this journey with you, man. It's going to be a fun one.
All right. Buckle up. Coming this weekend, starting on Saturday, Nuggets playoffs. We'll see what the Avs schedule looks like. Drew, what are you looking for tonight?
I'm going to be watching baseball for the first time all season. This is going to be a heavy baseball night for me, starting with the Rockies. Playing in Philadelphia right now, and that's a little pitcher's duel going between Cal Quantrill and Aaron Nola. Michael Toglia with a home run, his fourth of the year, has this game knotted up at one, so I'm going to watch this. Probably flip around to several other baseball games tonight as this thing wraps up probably by the time I get home.
Kamaze Granderson, what are you watching for tonight, and why is it the WNBA draft?
Oh, well, godly, man.
Shout out WNBA.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, there we go. That's what I'll be watching tonight. I'll be keeping my eyes out on that. A couple of mock drafts came out here in the last couple of days that kind of had me thinking, like, okay, I thought I knew 6 through 12, but I don't think I know it as well as I think I do. And so that's going to be interesting to see how the first round shakes out. Not to mention, Denver was mentioned by the commissioner as one of the 6 teams that they're going to be looking at as they look to expand out to more teams. They're looking to do 16 teams here in the next 3 to 4 years. So I'll continue to get some more information on that.
All right, really good stuff there. Hey, real quick, how many people watch the WNBA draft? Kamaze, write this down if you don't mind. Last year, 572,000 people watched it. 572,000. How many people watch it tonight with Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese?
Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, it's going to be high at the beginning because Caitlin Clark. So I'm going to go at least.
All right, so let's do this. What does it peak at?
Okay.
So, yeah.
It peaks probably at 2 million.
2 million?
Yeah.
Drew, what do you think it peaks at?
3.2 million.
Damn. That'd be 6 times what, right, around there?
Yeah. I mean, hey, there's not much else to watch tonight. What else are you going to watch? Might as well watch the WNBA draft.
Kamaze, how many people watched the WNBA draft compared to last year's 572,000?
Well, I'm going to say it's already peaked at 4.5 million.
4.5? Holy jumping. I'll go 2.4. I'll go 2.4 million.
You got 2.4.
We'll see what it looks like tomorrow. Thanks for making us a small part of your Monday. Very fun show. Get home safe. We step aside because Denver sports tonight is coming up next.